and not necessarily those of WICC or its advertisers. You're listening to This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. It's what you're talking about this week.
Good evening. This is Ann Carrick in the studio here at WICC, and Vincent Caprio is on the phone. Vincent, how are you this evening?
Great. I'm recovering from hernia surgery, so all my...
So I guess you don't mind telling people that. I wasn't sure you were going to share that.
You know, being that I have 1,800 friends on Facebook, as
that
I
you
came
already...
out of the recovery room, I actually...
I saw that.
I posted that I had gone through the recovery, and my brain was clear, which was a big concern of mine. I was very paranoid.
Really? And, just paranoid in general about anesthesia, that you'd come out being
right, foggy
or not clear.
So, and the truth is, as I was coming out, I named every president since 1900.
See, now most people would just, you know, count to 20 or something,
right, but
no.
Right. I started. McKinley was assassinated in 1901. Theodore Roosevelt.
Didn't they ask you the normal questions? You know, do you know who you are? Do you know why you're here?
And then after I named all the presidents, they turned and said, our expenses are $3.6 trillion, and our overall national debt is $13.7 billion.
Of course you did.
Trillion. Right. Right. So the surgeon was impressed by my knowledge of the facts.
So they decided you were either clear-headed or completely whacked.
Right. Right. So
okay.
I posted that. What's so great about Facebook? So I was lying there, and I came out at 3:30 on Friday afternoon, and I posted that by 3:35, and I got about 50 people who signed in wishing me thoughts. Thank you for sending some nice, kind remarks to me.
You're welcome.
So I couldn't make it in because I finally decided not to take any Percocet yesterday. I wouldn't have been able to do the show yesterday because I would have been very loopy.
But it might have been interesting, but yeah.
Right, I cut myself off the Percocets, but now I'm in pain.
Yeah.
So.
But you know, it's temporary. It'll be better. And if you had a hernia, then in the long run, you're going to be much happier.
I ask my wife every night, why did I decide to do this?
Oh, boy. So,
I had an exciting week because after our show,
right,
our election night show, which was so stimulating, and you did a great job. I just loved talk. We just had such a great time.
Yeah.
And then I immediately went back down to D.C., and I spoke at a conference on a Wednesday night. I did a keynote address, and then I was at the same conference. It was a database conference on a Wednesday, and that's when I had the opportunity to meet Karl Rove.
Which we saw that picture. Anybody who's following us on Facebook would have seen that picture, right?
Right, and like you saw it, and you made some remarks, and I posted it, and I wrote, my friends on the right, my friends on the left, the key word here from President Obama is compromise. Because I felt if I would have just put in a picture of myself and Karl Rove, then the left would have attacked me and the right would have attacked
me.
Well,
and some people did anyway, because that's just what they do.
I know. So my friends, they're Democrats. One of my roommate from 35 years ago at Villanova he writes on Facebook, you're a better man than I am, Vince. You shook his hand.
Right.
I know. And I tried to be conciliatory. I didn't act like we were in the end zone spiking the ball.
And is Karl Rove even a key political player right now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, he's very much a key political player.
So he's still somebody that people are listening to paying attention to. So, yeah, okay. Because I saw the picture, and I was asking you to clarify, because here's this picture of you with Karl Rove, but no explanation, like, why are you meeting with Karl Rove? That's what I wanted to know, right?
Well, it was really interesting, because I was taking the Amtrak back to Stanford, and he was standing there talking to Mr. Cox, who is Nixon's son-in-law, who's the head of the Republican Party in New York. And I interrupted them. I let them speak for a while. I interrupted them. I walked up and I said, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Rove and Mr. Cox. And Cox said, I can't believe that you know who I am. I said, of course. My mother watched the wedding in 71.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when Karl Rove said, yeah, I've met Vince before. He's kind of a political freak.
Junkie.
Junkie. No, he called me a freak to my face.
Freak,
because I had met him previously at the two conventions.
Well,
so.
Talking about D.C. and politics and all this stuff, what a wild election day in general, and also with all of the doings here in Bridgeport with the ballots and then the jumping the gun on announcing a winner for governor. We at least finally have a governor here in Connecticut.
Later.
And it, well, finally, we have one, and everybody seems to be in agreement that, okay, he's now the governor, or the governor-elect, you know.
Well, he finally conceded, right?
He did. I think once they had time for all the numbers to come in, everybody seemed to agree that Malloy had enough more votes that whatever the margin for error, it was still going to be Malloy, so
well,
everybody
was starting to remind me of the old Saturday Night Live routine, Francisco Franco is still dead. That's for the older people in the audience, the baby boomers, they remember that skit. Because Francisco Franco had died, but he was dying for so long in a coma in the 70s that they would come on the news and say, he's near death, he's near death.
Oh, right, right, right.
Saturday Night Live, as a joke on the news, said,
yeah,
he's still dead.
Exactly.
I know. I mean, I was in the...
Well, I don't really blame Foley for waiting, and I don't think many people did, because with all the confusion in Bridgeport... You know, and then it was really unfortunate that everybody involved, from one end to the other, were all the same political party. It just made it look really bad, even though I think it was just a blunder. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But because, you know, the city is predominantly Democrats, and the mayor is a Democratic mayor, and the Secretary of the State, and the candidate, and they're all from the same party, that it looks really bad, when in fact... You know, the only thing that really happened was they didn't have enough ballots, which should not have been a huge thing. That happens, you make copies, and the election goes on. But somehow that one thing didn't get handled well. Like, nobody noticed they were running out soon enough, so they didn't start making copies. So then you had this, like, gap where they didn't have any. And, you know, in other words, what should have been, you know, an unfortunate mistake that they didn't have enough ballots because the turnout was much higher than expected, it snowballed into this big, huge, ugly thing. And it got to the point where I think everybody was like, all right, let's just wait and get the real numbers.
Right.
And then decide who really won.
Right.
But, you know, we talked about several things last week. Remember you asked me, what did I think about Nancy Pelosi?
Yes.
Would she step down? And I didn't think so at first. And now, of course, you know, the rumor is that she wants to be the minority leader.
Yes.
Which has been all over the news. And you said it was going to be the most historic election since, I'm sure you know the year.
1952.
Thank you. And of course, it was.
Yes.
So, any big surprises?
Well, I mean, Nancy Pelosi sent that letter out on Friday, and I'm actually surprised she hasn't stepped aside. And there's a number of Democrat upstarts that have retained their seats, and they really would like her to step down because they feel that she will be continued to be used as a punching bag for the Republican Party.
Like, she'll be somebody to rally around,
right,
to be against their party.
Right, and they know that's going to happen in 2012.
Right.
So, you know, you would think that she would, her time's come.
She'd realize that, yeah. For
right.
The party's sake, that she would, I mean, if she wants to finish out her term in her elected position, but not run for minority leader, right?
Right. Well, right. Now, generally speaking, the defeated majority leader.
They resign, right?
Well, no, they stay in, and then eventually halfway through their term, they resign. But
don't
try to be the minority leader.
Yeah. Now,
it was interesting because we really nailed it on the head because I was trying to look forward about what was going to happen.
Right.
We had on the show, the three of us, and with Professor Lynch, kind of agreed that it would be about 55 to 60, and it was about 63 seats the Republicans took to take control. And we all said, I had said 52-48, and it ended up being 53-47 Democrats.
Right.
So the one big surprise was actually Reid retaining his seat.
Well, that was so close, but I think most people thought that he was going to lose it. Right.
Right. All the polls indicated that he was down 49 to 46, which, you know, only equals 95. But in the end, all the undecided went to him, and he actually won with a pretty big majority. I think it was 53 to 47. So that was kind of the big surprise of the night, that he did not lose.
And what about Connecticut, where there was this sweeping change of bringing in a lot of Republicans, and here in Connecticut, almost all the Democratic candidates won.
Right,
not quite, but almost.
Right, and that's what annoyed me. My pet peeve was these pundits. They kept saying there's a tsunami. You could count the word tsunami if you used it as a like a drinking right. game, you'd be drunk in an hour.
Well, if it was a tsunami, then we must have been like right. the high ground here right. where the water didn't rush over us because well, Connecticut went the opposite
right,
way.
All the pundits said career politicians are getting voted out.
Not here.
No. Yeah. Plymouth's one of the career politician. And Malloy, as you all know, has been the mayor of Stanford for many years.
Right.
So here we go. And there was an article in the Times about it on Sunday, how there was a tsunami, but hold on here, not in the state of Connecticut.
Connecticut, right. I feel like we're the one little blue rectangle on the whole map. I mean, it's not just Connecticut, but boy, did we stand out as being different than the rest of the country. Do you think it's because both Obama and Bill Clinton came here the weekend before Election Day and had those two rallies?
Yes. Well, let's not forget the four cities, Stanford, Bridgeport, New Haven, and Hartford, are approximately 8-1 Democrat to Republican.
Right.
And then all the Republicans live in the suburbs. And I think President Clinton and Obama coming here really did get the vote out, the union vote, the clerical workers, and the pink-collar workers, and it got them out to vote. Yeah.
Well, and the turnout in Bridgeport, they're estimating something like 60-65% in the city that has the biggest population, and right. that's unheard of. Usually the turnout is somewhere like 25% or less, especially for midterm. Now, everybody expects it to be a little higher this time.
Right.
But if it was really 60-65% turnout,
it's enormous.
We don't have that for presidential elections,
no.
Never mind a midterm.
Nationally, midterm is only about 38-40%. You're right, it was enormous turnout there.
Which is why they ran out of ballots, but that also probably is why it flipped the color card, we'll say, in Connecticut to blue. Although I have heard now there are people who are worried that New Haven and Hartford that have those sanctuary ID cards for illegal mm-hmm. residents, aliens, that they're concerned that somehow people were able to use those to register to vote and actually vote, even though they're not in the country legally, they're here illegally. You know, if that's true, that would be a huge problem on several levels. Election Day, as well as many other ways. If you're not here legally, you really are not supposed to be voting. I mean, even people who are legal residents with the right paperwork, green cards, whatever, to be here working, they don't vote unless they become mm-hmm. citizens. So if illegal residents are voting, that would be a big problem.
Right. Well, there's going to be big changes starting in January. You know, there were three Tea Party senators elected. There was Rand Paul from Kentucky, Rob Johnson from up in Wisconsin, and then Marco Rubio in Florida. So Rand Paul, who's named after Ayn Rand, a lot of people don't know that. So once again, you know the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, written in 1957. Most political junkies, first year at student government, somebody comes over and says, read this, kid. And, you know, I've read it a few times. And
you know, I was in student government. Nobody ever suggested
well,
I read that.
You know the book Atlas Shrugged.
Excuse me?
You know the book Atlas Shrugged.
I don't think so.
Oh, well, it was written by Ayn Rand in 1957, and he's named after Ayn Rand.
Okay.
So his father was a devotee of Ayn Rand, and she was a pure capitalist, libertarian.
Maybe I should read up. We share part of the same name.
Right.
And I was in student government, believe it or not.
I believe it. You're an organizer.
I was the treasurer because they trusted me with all the money.
Oh, that's great.
I was the money girl, you know. Hey, before we get too far, first of all, our topic for tonight really is going to be about manufacturing. We just want to do a little bit of election wrap-up here. A reminder to everyone listening, you can call in 203-333-WICC, which is 9422, or 1-800-922-6060. And before we got all the way off of election night, I wanted to ask you, we were talking about Nancy Pelosi, do you think that the Democratic caucus will make her the minority leader just because she wants it, or do you think that there's a chance they'll vote for someone else and oust her?
Well, initially I thought that she wouldn't, but I talked with some D.C. lobbyist insiders this afternoon because I figured you asked me that question, and I believe she will prevail because
she will.
The
okay.
people that are gone can't vote, so the people that are retained are her friends. And she's very powerful, and she really wants it. And if she was upended, it would be
that would
very
be huge
to her.
Yeah, that would be her own friends and her own party turning on her.
See, a lot of people don't realize she's quite a politician. You know, she's the daughter
clearly
of a mayor. Her father was the mayor of Baltimore.
I'm still confused a little bit why she wants it.
It's ego. You know, why did she go on TV with Diane Sawyer and pretend like nothing happened? And she didn't admit that what had happened. It was
her interview. Her take on the election night was that what the voters were saying were that the changes they had put in place were not happening fast enough, as opposed to they don't like the changes.
I don't agree with her.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, I know.
And I was sort of stunned that she didn't even acknowledge that people were unhappy, and she was spinning it as if that was the only thing, is that the American population was unhappy because all these things hadn't happened faster and that the results weren't happening faster.
It was delusional, because every one of those 63 that won, that beat the Republican, that beat the Democrat,
they were very clear in their campaign.
Yeah, in their campaign ads, they would say, Democrat so-and-so voted with Pelosi. Every one of them used her in the campaign ad, in the negative ad.
Yeah.
I guess she's delusional.
I just sat there sort of stunned. I didn't really know what to say. All right, last thing on politics before we take a break and move on to our real topic, manufacturing. Former President Bush 43, as you like to call him, which I had to laugh. I heard Oprah refer to them as 41 and 43. I'm like, oh, I have to take it back. Somebody does call them that. But George W. Bush has been on his book tour. I'm sure it's not over.
Oh, no.
Have you seen any of his interviews?
Yes, yeah. Because I've been relegated.
Because you've been stuck at home.
Yeah, I've seen them all.
Very interesting how now everybody is hearing, and they didn't seem to know this before, that with Katrina, for example, the federal government can't just step in without the state government asking for help, which I knew that because I had lived in Miami during Hurricane Andrew, and I know that the state has to request help, otherwise the federal government is overstepping their bounds. But there's all these little things that I knew and was frustrated that media coverage was not saying anything, because I don't think they knew. They didn't realize some of these things. And now everybody's like, oh, well, that makes more sense.
Right. Well,
where were you 8 years ago, 4 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever? How were they so clueless that they were busy harpooning him without having their facts?
Well, that was in 2005. It was during the old anybody but Bush days.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
But my last question, where was Senator Hillary Clinton last Tuesday?
I have no idea where
Cambodia.
She was.
Let's
Cambodia on election day.
Yeah, she wanted to be as far away from this as she wanted to be. Haven't heard anything about her.
Well, no, I was going to say, and it's worked, because I've not heard a peep from her or about her the last week. She wanted to put a little distance in there, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay, are we ready to take a break? Yeah. And we'll come back and talk about manufacturing?
Yes.
All right, so Vince, of course, we want you to hang on, and everybody else.